tossed out of his parents' house for being gay. Now a local teenager will attend his school of choice, Georgetown University, on a full scholarship. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. You can always get our podcast, too, on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, the incredible story of Seth Owen, the co-valedictorian at First Coast High School, who has become an international symbol for LGBT equality. What are your questions for Seth? What are your thoughts about this story? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, Florida's shark population is in trouble. We'll hear what's being done to stop what are called land-based shark attacks. That's a thing. And a local mom's back-to-school backpacks for kids of color become a popular item all over the country. We'll tell you about blended designs just in time for back-to-school. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, his incredible story has touched people all over the world. 18-year-old Seth Owen, who graduated earlier this year from First Coast High School on Jacksonville's North Side as the school's co-valedictorian, was forced out of his parents' home, he says, because he's gay and he didn't want to attend their church anymore. It seemed that Seth's dream of attending his first-choice university, Georgetown, would never become a reality because his parents were unwilling to co-sign his student loans, he says. But as Seth was couch surfing at friends' homes and trying to figure out his future, something amazing happened. Other caring adults stepped in. A teacher at First Coast High started a GoFundMe campaign to help Seth raise the funds to attend Georgetown. That GoFundMe quickly topped $130,000 with donations pouring in from across the globe. Then, more good news. Georgetown is giving Seth Owen a full ride. Can you believe that? Man, that's a lot of money. Georgetown is not cheap. So Seth will get to go to the college of his dreams. Joining us now with his story, we're pleased to welcome Seth Owen to Studio 5. Seth, good morning and congratulations. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What are your questions for Seth Owen as he has become an international symbol? We want your calls, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets, we're already getting those tweets. Send them to @MelissaInJax. Or weigh in on our Facebook page. Let us know what you think there. Okay, so at first it was all going well for you as you graduated. You were co-valedictorian at First Coast High, 4.16 GPA, and you got that exciting acceptance letter to Georgetown University. That was your dream school, right?
Yes, and I graduated with one of my very close friends as the other co-valedictorian, and we both had a 4.6133 GPA.
I stand corrected. It used to be 4.0 when I was in high school. Things have changed. An amazing academic record. And so clearly you were in the very, very top of your class. Then what happened?
Well, in my senior year of high school, early this year, the church began preaching a message that women were... their role was in the house, and that they were not to, you know, assume a man's responsibilities, that they were transgressing if they did. And it was stated that women were the weaker vessel. And I just couldn't sit back and listen to this, but what...
This was the church you'd grown up in your whole life?
My entire life.
Okay.
You know, the people in this church have been members for 50 plus years and, you know, changed my diapers as a kid. So I really grew up, you know, calling everybody aunt and uncle in this church. We were all very close. And, they began preaching this message that children were to obey their parents, even if they're being abused, that the Bible makes no exception. And I was blown away by this, that, you know, this could be said in a church. And so I presented my argument to my parents, and I was like, this is not okay. You know, I'm okay with attending any church that you approve of besides the one that we currently attend. And my father said, you know, you're disobeying your parents because this is the church that I've chosen, and this is a church you will attend with us as a family. And he looked at me, and in reference to my disobedience, he said, biblically, we have the right to stone you for what you're saying. And I knew at that moment, it had gone way too far, that, you know, their religious views far surpassed my need for safety. And
there had been anti-gay preaching from the pulpit too, right?
For sure. And of course, that always bothered me, but, you know,
But you reached a last straw moment. And you were 18 by this time?
No, I was 17.
You were 17. So you were still not an adult, but you had reached that point where you just didn't want to go to this church anymore.
It's not that I didn't want to go, it's that I couldn't go. Because sitting back in the pew, I'm accepting this message and I'm supporting it. And I could not sit there and have them, you know, tell some little girl that she has to accept the abuse simply because they're her parents.
So you reached a breaking point with your folks. They said, if you don't want to attend this church with us, you can't stay here anymore. Is that what it came to?
They said, you either attend the church or you can move out. You know, I pleaded with them. I was like, I'm not ready to move out. And this is, you know, this is not what I need or what I want. But there was no talking them out of it.
So you moved out. Where'd you go?
I was just, you know, couch surfing with friends and mentors for a while, and then I moved in permanently with my best friend. So I've been at home ever since.
So that's where you are now.
Yes.
Then you were presented with this issue of how you were going to attend Georgetown, because your parents, I guess, didn't want to co-sign on the loan paperwork?
Well, the issue was that my financial aid package, which was a very generous financial aid package to begin with, was based on my parents' income. And there was a $15,000 expected family contribution. And so I contacted...
Per year. Right.
Yes. This is only for the first year. Their cost of attendance is about $74,000 with insurance that is required of me. It's about $77,000 a year. So they gave a very generous financial aid package, but it was based on my parents' income. And so I appealed that decision, and it was denied twice. My request for independency status. They did, however, file some paperwork with FAFSA, and I qualified for another $6,000 grant, and I was given a $3,000 first-generation low-income student scholarship. But the issue, I attempted to take out private loans, but I could not without a co-signer.
You were 17 years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my parents refused to co-sign.
And they refused to co-sign. You must have been devastated.
Oh, I was. I can remember being on the phone with an official at Georgetown and just shedding into tears because I realized that my dream of attending college was no longer reality. There was a $20,000 difference between me and D.C. So
then something amazing happened. A teacher of yours said, I'm going to help Seth. What did she do?
I went out to coffee with her, and I was extremely disappointed and really depressed about the entire situation. And she said, if I could co-sign for you, I would this moment. But she said, I can start a GoFundMe. And she wrote everything. She started it, and it took off from there.
Right. Your teacher is named, let's give her all the credit,
Jane Martin.
What subject did she teach?
She was my ninth grade biology teacher, and she's currently teaching in Boston. And she is a alumni of Teach for America.
Oh, very nice. Okay. So she starts the GoFundMe. And did you have... did you think, oh, it might raise a little bit, but it's not going to get me where I need to go? What were your thoughts?
I was shocked when it hit 2,000. I was just...
You thought 2,000 was a lot.
I did. I was blown away that, you know, people had faith in me and my ability to be successful. And it just kept going up, and I was just so astounded.
It went up all right. It went up above $130,000.
It was
that'll off. Cover most of Georgetown.
Yes, we did close down the GoFundMe the other day at $141,000, I believe.
Oh my goodness! So as if that weren't exciting enough, then here's the kicker to it all: Georgetown must have been following all the publicity around this, because then they came back to you and said, you can go for free. We're going to give you a full scholarship. How was that communicated to you?
Well, I was on the phone with the dean of financial aid and their general counsel, and we were, you know, just really discussing the financial aid package and the issues with it. And I told them, I said, I'm worried because nothing was done until someone else spoke up on my behalf. That they didn't adjust anything until someone else called attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
because certainly you're not the only teenager in this situation.
Of course, I've heard from so many teenagers, and it's too common. But to clarify, it's not a full ride. My expected family contribution is now zero. They changed the policy for me so that my federal loans will go towards my expected family contribution, and you know, I still have to pay for insurance and other
you
things
still have
for
to
cost
pay
of living.
some costs. And then the 140 plus that the GoFundMe has raised, you're going to turn that to a new purpose. Can you tell us where that money will now go?
I am currently in discussion with Jasmine. It's a local organization in Jacksonville who were extremely supportive of the GSA that I founded and was president of my senior year in high school. And they were also
a Gay Straight Alliance, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And they were extremely supportive when everything went down with my parents. I reached out to them for assistance. And so we're looking into starting a scholarship fund for kids in similar situations, starting off in the Jacksonville area, partnering with Jasmine. So nothing's official, but we're still working on getting that together.
Well, let's go to some calls now for Seth Owen, the First Coast High School co-valedictorian. He is headed to Georgetown in a couple weeks after his story touched hearts worldwide. What are your questions and thoughts? 549-2937. Let's go to Pat. Pat is in Nocatee. Hey, Pat, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to congratulate Seth for making it into Georgetown. I just went back to my 50th reunion at Georgetown, where I also was a student at the School of Foreign Service. And I just hope he has the absolutely fabulous things that happened to me while I was there. Two of the members of the class, and there's only about, back then it was about 180 in each of the class in Foreign Service, and two of them were presidents, became presidents, Bill Clinton and Gloria Macapagal Arroyo of the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and both of them were at the reunion and, you know, had pictures taken with them, and it was, and as well, all the other friends that I'd had over the years there. And I think what Seth will find out is students come from all different types of families. And some provide great support, others minimal. There's all kinds of, if you will, family difficulties. So there'll be a great support group there. And I think that he will have
the support
talent.
He needs. Yeah. Well, Pat, thanks for sharing that. I'm sure a lot of alumni have reached out to Seth like yourself. Thank you so much for your call. And he mentioned the School of Foreign Service. That's what you want to do?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be attending there.
You're attending. And so what are your career goals? What would you like to do after graduation?
Well, I'd like to major in international politics and then pursue a law degree. I'm really interested in being a defense lawyer for juvenile delinquents. I have seen in Jacksonville from experienced professionals that there is a unfortunate correlation between poverty and juvenile delinquency. Mm-hmm. And I think that society has a lot of opportunity to step in. So I'd really like to pursue that career.
549-2937. Doran is on the west side. Doran, hello.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning, Seth. I wanted to ask his advice. I think his situation is really sad and tragic, but it's not unique. And I'm wondering if what advice he has developed for parents who find themselves in a situation where their philosophy or their faith tradition conflicts with their child's sexuality. Seth, how would you advise parents in this situation, or what would you recommend to parents who find themselves in this situation so that they maintain their relationship with their child without necessarily having to give up or forfeit their faith tradition, but still keep a real close connection with their child and maintain a healthy relationship? I'd love to hear what you think.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. You are correct. It is way too common, and my story is not unique. Of the 1.6 million youth, 40% of them are LGBTQ plus identify, and it is a unfortunate statistic. So you are correct. It is way too common. I would advise parents to be completely supportive of your child and all of the good things they're doing. At times it feels like your parents might be attacking you simply because of your sexuality. You know, I think that it's important to continue to support them in school and support them in sports and extracurricular activities and let them know that you're genuinely there for their well-being and for them as a whole person. A good example of that is my grandma. You know, I know that she hasn't changed her beliefs, but she is, you know, texting me every day, checking to make sure I'm okay, asking, you know, about how my day is going. And you know, she's even sending advice on how to be safe and how to, she's really meeting me in the middle. You know, I know that she doesn't agree, but she is.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, and you underwent something that a lot of kids in your position have been forced to undergo. Your parents put you into a widely debunked practice, something that the, for example, the American Academy of Pediatrics considers to be harmful and ineffective, conversion therapy.
Yes.
What happened to you when that happened?
It was not like a conversion camp, but it was for sure conversion therapy. And it is extremely disappointing because at that time, I believe that was what was right for me. You know, my parents are telling me that, and my parents are telling this healthcare professional that this is what I need. And I didn't see any progress. And so I think that is a very detrimental thing about conversion therapy that's not really talked about, is because we see no progress, it's, you know, we get discouraged.
It doesn't work. I mean, that's yeah. Pretty widely understood. Yeah. What did they try to do in this therapy? I'm just curious to what were the tactics?
Well, I wasn't in the therapy very long, but they really encouraged stereotypical masculine task. And
like what? Watching football. I mean, I don't even know what goes on. What did they say you should do?
One that I, you know, remember is I'm not a mechanic at all, you know, but I was encouraged to buy a
broken down car,
you know, and
going to be a gearhead. Okay.
Yeah. So if you know me, I'm always have my head in a book, you know, it's a textbook or novel and cars just aren't my thing. But, you know, you mentioned the conversion therapy, you know, it's estimated that 20,000 youth, you know, between the ages of 13 and 17 will undergo conversion therapy by a licensed healthcare professional and almost 57,000 by a spiritual advisor.
Yeah. And so much so that actually I thought of you the other day when reading a review of a movie that's coming out about this. It's going to star Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman as evangelical parents who force their son into conversion therapy. It's a film called Boy Erased. And the title of that made me sad because that's in effect what this is trying to erase someone's core, their identity.
Absolutely. You know, I can remember driving home from school, which was always my safe place, and I would just break down into tears because I realized I had to put a mask on, you know, around my family, and I should be completely comfortable around my family, yet here I was having to, you know, act as a different character. You know, just to make it by.
And what's it like for you now? Because now you're 18, you're out on your own, you're moving toward your goals. You're free now, I guess. Is that how you feel? Free?
I feel absolutely liberated. And you know, everywhere I go, I feel like I can be my true self. And it's hard to try and, you know, tell how that feels without going through it yourself. But it's extremely difficult to not be able to express who you are, or to, you know, always have to watch your back, you know, because you don't know what people are going to say or how they feel.
The closet is a scary place, I guess, even scarier than coming out. At least that's what friends have expressed
yes.
to me. I wouldn't presume to know, but it's good to be able to have you express that to our listeners. Marcus in Springfield. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, good morning. First of all, in my business, we have another name for conversion therapy. We call it torture.
And that's What's your business?
I'm an attorney. I do criminal defense, including juvenile cases. I also do LGBTQ rights at the Barnett Law Firm. And Seth, when you come home next summer, if you want an internship, buddy, you've got one.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a great offer. All right, let's put Marcus on hold so he can get your number. Thanks for the call, Marcus. Larry in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hey, yes, I'm a heterosexual, over 70-year-old man, and I am so impressed by your story. And I think the most important thing of your story is you refused to become a victim and you took control of your own life. That example will go a long ways for other kids in this situation.
Thanks, Larry. Okay. Yeah, and you have become a role model. How does that sit with you?
Well, I think it's, like Mr. Larry said, I think it's very important not to become the victim, you know, and to, because we all go through very difficult situations. So it's important to just pick it up and keep going and do what we can. As far as being a role model, I'm extremely honored. But it,
have you had other teens reach out to you?
Oh, I've had an abundance of people reach out and of all ages saying, I'm going through something similar, or I went through something. Thank you for sharing your story. And it's extremely sad to hear that someone else is going through something similar, but it's the truth, you know?
And do you feel the weight of that now being you've become a symbol, you know, someone other teenagers are looking up to as, I guess, a symbol of hope for them. That's a lot for an 18-year-old kid, I would think, even one as strong and focused as you. To take on, how are you doing with that?
It is a big role, but it's an important one, and I'm just honored that I have the chance to speak up and speak out about these issues that the LGBTQ plus community still faces today. You know, but I think it's important to let these kids know who are going through similar situations to roll their shoulders back, hold their head up, and always be theirself. You know.
Andy emails the show from Neptune Beach. Seth, I hope someday your parents will realize what they are missing out on. It's a real tragedy that they cannot see what an outstanding young person they have raised and understand that their religious views are restricting the love that Jesus taught. Here's a message from Cindy Watson of Jasmine. We congratulate Seth as a local hero for mastering his own resiliency, leading his school's Gay Straight Alliance, and now opening his resources to other youth in this situation. By the way, they want people to know they have a family support and acceptance project that helps parents move toward acceptance of their LGBTQ youth. Rejection pushes kids to risk and harm, and few parents actually want that, she says, for their kids. Here's a tweet from Mel. I told my kids about Seth the other day, and they were floored by the actions of his family. Seth seems to be a great kid with a solid head on his shoulders. He will enjoy DC and flourish. We're getting tweets from St. John's Cathedral. Seth is welcome to come and worship with us. And here's one from Victor. I'd love to hear Seth's thoughts on Jacksonville and inclusivity. The story has gone global, but what's the local support been like? Has the mayor reached out? You know, this is a city that just passed an HRO, human rights ordinance, a couple mm-hmm. years ago. It's actually already being challenged in court. There was a headline about that this morning that somebody alerted me to. So have you had officials from this city reaching out to you is what he'd like to know. And what are your thoughts about the environment in Jacksonville?
Growing up on the north side of town, I always thought it was very, not very LGBTQ plus friendly. However, the support from the Jacksonville area and donations to the GoFundMe really showed me that, you know, Jacksonville really does stand behind its youth. And, you know, I have faith in Jacksonville. We might still have a long way to go, but, mm-hmm. you know, we have the drive to get there. And I'm extremely proud of Jacksonville. I have not had any officials from the Jacksonville area reach out, but Congresswoman Murphy from Florida's 7th District, her chief of staff reached out on her behalf, and they offered me an internship in the D.C. office. and really, you know, show their support. And
that's great. I think you're going to get a lot of offers for those kinds of things. And so, you know, you're going to be very busy very soon. Best of luck as you start your freshman year at Georgetown. Gosh, just in a couple of weeks. I can't believe how this year is flying by. It's an amazing story. And if you want to learn more about it, we'll have more about Seth on our website later today. And they can also look you up at the GoFundMe account, right? Or where's the best place for them to reach you?
The GoFundMe account, it's still up, but it's no longer accepting donations.
Okay. Seth Owen, thanks for being with us. You're going to do great things. Best of luck.
Thank you again.
Much more still ahead. Later, the local mom who's hit it big with her new back-to-school item for kids of color. We'll spotlight blended designs later on. But up next, the campaign to save Florida's sharks. Yes, sharks. That's in a moment.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical for your safety in a weather emergency. Visit a public library to get your 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide. Stay informed with real-time updates at jaxready.com or download the Jax Ready app to also identify your specific zone and important information. Keep your radio on 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this summer, a campaign is ramping up across the state to save Florida sharks. Now, we typically think of sharks as attacking us, humans who venture out into the ocean. But lately, land-based attacks on sharks are on the rise. So much so that Florida Fish and Wildlife officials are drafting new rules regarding this practice. Animal activist Adam Sugalski is also campaigning about this. He's here with more. Adam, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's great to be back on your show. So what's happening is the FWC is having open public comment because shark fishing, land-based shark fishing, is becoming very popular. And what that entails is people going to beaches, which can be at night or during the day, where people are surfing or swimming. They might run a kayak out 500 yards and chum the water. And then they pull in hammerheads, bull sharks, tiger sharks. They're targeting specific species of sharks. And what happens is when they, it might take a half hour to 2 hours to pull these sharks in, many of the sharks die after the fight. They drag them up on the beach called dry landing, which they're really not supposed to do for hammerheads, which are prohibited. They sit in the back, pull the head up and take a selfie. It's, to me, it equates to almost trophy hunting.
Why is this happening? Why is this on the rise?
It's like this adrenaline fueled sport, and social media has exacerbated this issue because everybody wants their picture of holding a shark and look at me and I'm dominating it. It's like someone sitting on a dead elephant in Africa. It equates to it. Now, they're not eating these sharks or feeding their families. So there's a big difference between a sport and you're having a hobby as opposed to, you know, surviving.
I see. And so as the Fish and Wildlife Commission is putting together new rules, you have a new campaign about this as well. People can look at your website, floridasharks.org. Why'd you decide to get involved in this?
You know, I've been a surfer in Jacksonville, surfed about 30 years, and I've personally witnessed people shark fishing and actually gotten in arguments with shark fishermen. One guy, he left his shark on the fishing line and went to eat lunch, and it was in there, just sitting there hanging. And I went over to the gentleman saying, "Are you going to let the shark go?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll get to it." And I said, "Well, you know what? I'll do it for you." And so I went in his tackle box, grabbed his pliers, and let the shark go. And he didn't even seem to care. But it's this kind of wanton waste and wildlife harassment that these shark fishermen are doing. And that's why I got involved, because there's so much pressure from sharks, from commercial fishing and all over the world, especially from Asia, and the finning. And so I just think
taking the fins off.
And that's not really what I'm talking about here, but globally sharks are under attack. And that's why I think it's so important to get people involved in this campaign.
And can you explain why it's important? You know, they're a predator species. They're one we're afraid of. But of course, this practice of recreational shark fishing, it's actually endangering people. And it disrupts the balance, I guess, in the oceans as well, right?
You make a great point. When you remove sharks as the top predator, there can be a cascading effects on other animals, because sharks, there have been examples in the Mid-Atlantic where they'll remove shark populations and sharks feed on the rays. Once the rays overpopulate, they will devastate lobster and scallop populations. So this, you know, aside from having the public safety aspect, you're having where you could destroy fisheries and other fishermen's livelihood. People don't realize how important sharks basically keep our ocean balanced. And this is why somebody's hobby is not as important as keeping our ocean healthy and people healthy and safe.
We're talking about the campaign against shark attacks. Yeah. You can learn more at floridasharks.org. Let's go to a few calls. 549-2937. It's not Shark Week, by the way. We're just talking about this. Anyway, Kimberly in Castle Bay. Hey, Kimberly. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hey. Hi, Adam. I appreciate you. I don't know if you can hear me, but I appreciate you very much. I'm actually a very good friend of Katrina Shattuck's. I don't know if you know her, but she's the one who got me to have the attention on this show. But I'm very against it. Number one, when you go to the beach, you're going there for your pleasure. You're going there to relax. The sound of the wave. Your children are playing in the sand. And then here you have these fishermen that come up and set up camp, you know, or like you said, they pull these sharks in, and I, for one, don't like it. And it causes stress. The kids are like, why are they doing that? It's, you know, it's a shark. There's that stress factor. You know, I don't want to see it happening anymore. I don't think it's right. If they're going to do it out on a boat where no one sees you. I'd rather them not do it at all, like you said, but definitely not where people are trying to enjoy their day. And I might add that I have personally been there as well. I've seen them pull up stingrays, giant stingrays. That upsets me. And I've actually gone over to them and said, why are you even fishing here? Because now my day is disrupted. Because now the whole day I'm going to be arguing with you in my head, you know, and on top of arguing with you in person. And then I'm have a devastated day because I'm wondering why they have to do it in the first place. Because you're right, they just let it go, but it's still hurt. Now it's injured. So I don't appreciate it at all. And I love that you're fighting for this. And I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Thank you. Now, she makes a good point, especially with hammerheads. What happens is they're fighting for their life, and the lactic acid can build up in their blood. And when you release them, there's a 50% chance in one of the studies that they die. And, you know, I'm sorry, but my safety animal and sharks' lives are more important than your hobby. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, I know people say this is tradition. I've heard it before with like with trophy hunting. Oh, it's my tradition. But there are so many people. And I think what happens is people don't realize it's not the one individual land-based shark fishing. The cumulative effect, the collective effect of all these people doing it and other businesses that are chartering basically. People pay money and they'll set up shark camps at night on the beach and all these outsiders come. And so it's becoming this, it's really taking off as almost a business as well as a hobby. And we want to stop it now.
What is the state doing around that? What rules are Fish and Wildlife setting up?
Well, right now they do have certain rules, but the problem is there's zero enforcement. And it's almost like, you know, wink, wink, go, we don't see it, or they don't want to issue a ticket. So there's been hardly any enforcement over the years. So what we're really asking, the FWC is taking public comment at JU on the 21st at 6 o'clock. You can find the information on our website. Go to the meeting and speak out. I'll be there with several people. And we're asking basically the FWC to do several things. One, have a special shark permit. Two, ban chumming. Three, ban shore-based shark fishing from guarded beaches or public bathing areas. Ban dry landing. When you pull a shark up, they don't have the skeletal structure that humans do. Their organs almost collapse in themselves, and you can get organ tears when you release them back. So, and then also, too, banning of tournaments like the big hammerhead challenge that targets hammerheads. And then the banning of use of kayak or drones to drop bait. And then requiring these shark fishermen to have special gear so they do catch a shark, they can release it quickly. So they really need to put these rules in place.
549-2937. Lots of calls about this. Tal in San Marco. Hey, Tal.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay.
I just wanted to offer a little bit of a differing opinion. I am a surfer and a shark fisherman as well. And I think the misconception is that the fishermen are sort of drawing in the sharks, and that's pretty untrue. I mean, anybody who spends enough time in the water will know that the sharks are there every day anyway. You know, and I've personally sat on the beach for days at a time with bloody pieces of fish in the water and not caught a shark. So I think there's a misconception that they're drawing them in. And also the previous caller had mentioned that her day was disrupted by fishermen and the beach was there for her enjoyment. And I would offer that, you know, people, you know, also use the beach to enjoy other things besides sitting in the sand and looking at the waves. You know, the fishermen have as much right to be there, at least currently, as the bathers or the surfers or the people just enjoying the day.
All right, I hear you. Okay, thanks for that. So what about that argument, Adam?
You know,
you're a surfer. Surfers see sharks all the time.
You know, I grew up surfing in Palm Beach at Reef Road. I mean, I saw when the bluefish schools would come by, you know, bull sharks. I mean, I've been checked out by hammerheads. He's absolutely right. There are sharks. But it's common sense. If you're pulling in a stressed out fish that's bleeding, or you're putting chum in the water, that you will maybe attract more sharks and they might accidentally bite somebody, or you increase the percentage of a chance of a shark attack happening. I think that's common sense. If a fish is being reeled in, or you're putting a fish out and chumming the water. And I just think, you know, there are two incompatible user groups, surfers and swimmers and land-based shark fishermen should not be anywhere near each other. If they're going to shark fish, it should be away from like public beaches where, you know, the danger could increase. But he is right. I mean, I've surfed Talbot Island, have sharks. I've had a bull shark chase me out of the water before. So they're all around us, but we're increasing the chances.
And what would you say to those listening to this who might say, well, who cares if some sharks get killed? They're going to kill us. You know, what about people that they're not on board with your effort here?
Well, then, you know, they might, if they're not, you know, with public safety or the shark issue, the sharks getting killed. But then what about the oceans? What about the point I mentioned about if you take away the sharks, the cascading damage to, you know,
you're disrupting the ecosystem.
That's a big point too. And that's when I think we need to stop and realize, is the hobby worth the damage it could potentially do? And I'm glad the FWC is looking at this. It's such an important issue.
Kimberly in Deltona. Ooh, all the way in Deltona this morning. Hey, Kimberly, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Adam.
Hey.
I wanted to let you guys know that when I first moved here 13 years ago, the first thing I wanted to do was go to the beach. We went to Daytona Beach. It's a beautiful day, and there are tons of people out there swimming. all ages. And to the left of me, there were like six or seven guys standing there with these large poles, and they're fishing. So I walked up to them, and I said, I didn't know you could fish on the beach where there are people swimming. And they said, yeah, we can. There's no law against it. And I thought, well, I said to them, can you see what you're doing is detrimental to the people that are swimming here? You're luring fish and sharks and God knows what else closer to the beach line, and there are kids swimming here. Wouldn't you feel awful if one of them got bit because of what you're doing? They laughed at me and just kept right on doing it. I couldn't believe it, that was legal to do that, and I still don't think it's right. Just because you can do something doesn't make it right. And I firmly stand behind Adam on what he's trying to do, and I believe in what he's saying. And I just wanted to voice my opinion on it, because I don't know about anybody else, but if you just stand there and you think about it, it's crazy. Why would you let people throw bloody things into the water and lure animals or, you know, marine life close to the shore where there are kids swimming and take a chance on one of them getting hurt?
Yeah, okay.
I just don't get that.
Thank you, Kimberly. So is it your hope that you could get the state to ban this utterly? Or, as you said, enforcement is spotty. So where does this go from here?
Well, right now we're ramping up at floridasharks.org. Like I said, people can go there. And a big thing right now is we need everybody who's against land-based shark fishing. You can go to our website. We tell you how to do it. You can fill out a comment form, which is as important as going to a meeting, because they're counting who's against it and who's for it. Now, we're not asking for an outright ban, although I wish they wouldn't shark fish, but you know, that's not going to happen. But if we can get rules in place and get them enforced, we can basically put a halt on this thing before it gets out of hand and before a person gets bit or ecosystems gets damaged. And I'll make one more point about the trash left behind by some shark fishermen. A friend of mine, Walter Coker in St. Augustine, he has some guy cut a shark rig loose floating in Matanzas Inlet. And it was 200 yards of monofilament line, which a few pounds of weights, a huge dead stingray, just floating. I mean, that's an environmental hazard in itself. So, you know, this topic really needs to be, you know, put under the microscope, and then it better be enforced, because we're going to do our citizen watch groups, like neighborhood watches, and have people can call numbers. And so we're just hoping this will get the attention. And I would like to thank you for having me on the show and letting, you know, the people know about what's happening.
You can go to the website floridasharks.org or come out to JU in 2 weeks on the 21st of August, Tuesday the 21st, 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock.
At the Swisher Auditorium?
Yeah, the auditorium, and they're talking about rules, and they want people to speak, and we're bringing a lot of people to speak about this topic.
All right, it's the campaign against land-based shark fishing. If you've had any knowledge of that, send us an email about it, too. We're just curious to keep following the story. But Adam Sugalski, thanks for being with us. Again, that website is floridasharks.org.
Thanks, Melissa.
A quick break, and in a moment, the First Coast mom who's made a splash with her back-to-school backpacks that feature kids of color. We'll learn more about blended designs right after this.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
WJCT listeners and viewers enjoy and support cultural events and activities. Many attend gallery openings, concerts, festivals, and art exhibits in Jacksonville and surrounding areas. Learn how to reach this audience by calling 358-6367.
Some American sanctions on Iran are back on. Oil is next, if the U.S. can make them stick.
It is also possible for Iran to truck its oil across the border to Turkey, and that would be much harder for the U.S. to track.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Cat, meet mouse, next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Marco Werman. The world is people.
They become celebrities. They're the salvation of their families. They've been sending money back to people who needed school fees, medical fees. So when they return, it's not just your brother returning. It's not just your uncle, but the person who has been the savior of the family for years. That person is coming back to the community. So they're definitely celebrated.
Join us and listen to the world this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Can you be addicted to video games? The World Health Organization now lists gaming disorder as an official mental health condition. How did a fun hobby for many become a serious problem for some? Knowing when to say,
game over.
Next time on 1A, today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, this is an amazing item to add to your back-to-school checklist for your kids, and it's made by a local company. The First Coast firm called Blended Designs makes bags, totes, and tools that feature incredible artwork, characters who are children of color. These are the cutest things that you've ever seen, and they're getting national attention. Casey Kelly is the CEO of Blended Designs, and she joins us now right before back to school. God help me. Casey, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having
me. And congratulations on all of this.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I just did all the back to school shopping, which is why I was kind of sighing a little bit. It's that
right.
time of year again. Parents have to do all this. You have come out with a product that is so cool. It's you have these cute backpacks and other items, and there are these fun characters on the back, boys and girls, in a range of skin tones. How'd
yes.
you come up with this idea?
So I actually came up with the idea because of my son, Carter. It was really his idea that I kind of took over. But he came to me. He wanted to see himself on a backpack. He wanted someone that looked like him on a bag. And I couldn't find anything. And at the time, Carter was only 8. And I couldn't find anything at all. And it dawned on me I hadn't really looked before because I would buy like characters, but that were not human. And my background's insights and analytics. I've spent my career in consumer product goods, understanding the data behind it. So of course I had to research and look at the data. And what I found was less than 2% of the character backpacks include children of color. So we knew
found
we
a
would
hole
fill,
in the market, mm-hmm, gap in the market,
fill a void. And you know, we used Carter's image as the first kid, and then the other 8 kids that we have are all people that we know, kids we know. So we use their names, and it's just really
it's taken off. It's taken off. You were on The View this
yes.
summer. How was that to
it was
promote
a
this
pleasure.
Idea?
And, you know, Whoopi Goldberg was so warm, and, you know, everyone, the whole cast, it was just, I felt like, oh, I've arrived, you know, once
yeah,
I got
sure.
on The View, even though, you know, last year we launched in March of 2017. And within 2 months, July and August, our first back to school season, we had done $250,000 in sales.
Oh, my gosh.
So even that didn't let me know that I arrived. I knew that, okay, people like it. It's good. But being on The View, I had it arrived.
You arrived.
Right.
That's right. Now, what is so neat about this is it's kind of a trite saying, but you can't be what you can't see.
Right.
And for a little boy or girl of color, having this positive image of someone that looks like them right on their backpack, what a boost as they go back to school.
Right.
That's the idea, right?
Right. We have a mantra that we say, if you change the image, you'll change the narrative. And unfortunately, right now, a lot of the images that children of color see are very negative. And, you know, it's what they see on the media. It's what they see just out in the streets. And so we don't get a lot of positive images of our children. So we wanted to present them with something positive and also give them that mantra, because all of the T-shirts that the characters are wearing say, I can do anything. And it comes from our line of t-shirts that we had first. That's Philippians 4:13. So that's where it all based from. But it's really like to remind them, despite what everyone else is telling you, you actually can do anything.
Yeah. This is the message on all your products, the t-shirts, the backpacks. And so there's a whole line of products.
Yes.
How can people get the products?
We are on blendeddesigns.com. And we are shipping out here in Jacksonville. We have a 5,000 square foot warehouse and we actually ship daily. So if any order placed before 1 o'clock, we'll go out the same day. We ship priority mail because we want to make sure that people are getting their products in time for school.
And I bet the demand's pretty high right now.
Yes, it's pretty high. You know, we're shipping out about 175 orders a day and we anticipate it to go up because, you know, we've only had a few districts that have started school so far. Internationally, we're doing business in Canada, Netherlands, the UK. We're actually global now.
Wow. Next up, Target and Walmart stores, I bet.
Well, we were asked by Walmart to be on Walmart.com, but we realized from a financial standpoint, it really wasn't a good fit for us.
Okay.
But, you know, as we grow and have more leverage, we can go back at the table and say, hey, you know,
you're in that phase where you're growing by leaps and bounds. So it's so exciting to have such a business success story like this that's going to help so many kids. So kudos to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
She's local mom, Casey Kelly, CEO of this exploding company, Blended Designs. Go to blendeddesigns.com and get that back to school backpack or t-shirt. They have some other products too for your child. Have fun with back to school.
Thank you. Yes, back to school is different now.
Yeah, it's coming up soon. Yes. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. Our theme by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on 1A, the problem of baby boomers facing bankruptcy. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow and make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Have a great day, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.